15. Gary walked into the cabin with the blonde Gwen on his arm, cooing in his ear about how nice it was to have visitors. Behind him, the redhead entered holding Tyler's hand, gushing about how rough and manly it felt. The brunette Gwen entered walking backward, holding both of Jimmy's hands, leading him forward and gazing over every inch of him, as if he were a priceless work of art. Philip followed them in, alone and grumpy. Philip had no sooner crossed the threshold before the black-haired Gwen appeared and clung to his side as if drawn there by magnets. From the outside, the building had seemed like a normal medieval dwelling, larger than usual, but of conventional design and made of predictable materials. Inside, it was a different story. They entered a large room that looked as if a swinging bachelor from the late 60s had attempted to decorate his pad using materials he stole from a Renaissance fair. The floor on which they stood formed an elevated ring around the perimeter of the room. Set into the middle of the floor was a sunken seating area, the kind of thing that used to be called a conversation pit. Although the silky pillows and cushions that lined the sofas and the floor made Philip doubt that it had been designed with conversation in mind. Along one wall there was a bar with several bottles of no doubt intoxicating liquids, ranging in color from perfectly clear to dark brown. On another wall there was a fireplace with a roaring fire and the mandatory bearskin rug. The third wall held a staircase leading upstairs and a series of pegs. Various garments hung from the pegs. At a glance, they seemed period accurate, but when Philip looked for a moment, he saw that in addition to the expected fur and leather items, there were garments made of gauze, denim, plaid, and something that looked like shiny black plastic. Gary, Tyler, and Jimmy allowed themselves to be led down into the pit, where they were gently placed into seats and gently fussed over. Philip said, "No thanks," and walked over to the fireplace instead. He immediately took off the multiple robes he'd been wearing in an unsuccessful attempt to stay warm. The black-haired Gwen took each filthy robe as if it were a treasure. Philip crouched before the fire, warming his hands while the black-haired Gwen watched, waiting for him to remove more clothes. Once everyone seemed comfortable, the blonde Gwen drew back from Gary and said,
"After your long journey, you must be terribly hungry."
Gary arched his eyebrows in a way he hoped was suave and said,
"Yes, very."
She drew her face closer to his and said,
"I bet it's been a long time since you've had a good meal."
"It's been so long," Gary said. "So long."
The blonde Gwen giggled and said,
"Well, we'll be right back, and then you'll have as much food as you like."
She and the other Gwens all stood up as if on cue and walked out of the room through a door next to the bar. Philip stood by the fire, looking at the other three men lying prone among the cushions, looking forlornly at the door through which the Gwens had just left.
"You're pathetic," he said. "It's no wonder women don't respect men."
Tyler said,
"Women don't respect men because we didn't respect them first. It's retaliation."
Gary added,
"And we're not pathetic. We're just playing them, drawing them out, hoping they'll tip their hand."
Philip said,
"Yeah, I bet."
"Relax, Philip," Jimmy said. "We're in complete control of the situation. We're not going to let it go any further than it already has. We've all got our guard up."
Philip said,
"Yeah, I can see that."
Tyler said,
"Come on, Phil. You knew what we'd find in here. You knew it would be something like this."
"That's it, Tyler. Todd, if he's going to watch any part of this little misadventure he's cooked up for us, it'll be this. Anyway, Todd designed this whole scenario to be irresistibly seductive. Look around you, guys. We're standing in a sexist buffoon's idea of romance."
"And credit where it's due," Gary said. I think what he came up with is pretty effective.
Yeah, Philip agreed, scowling. That's why it angers me.
The door to the next room reopened, and the four Gwens returned, each carrying a lidded platter. Three settled in next to Jimmy, Tyler, and Gary. The one with black hair stood next to Philip, brandishing her platter. She glanced down to her own cleavage, then looked up at Philip expectantly and said,
"Are you hungry?"
Philip groaned.
"I feel like I owe every woman on the planet an apology, including you."
The artificial Gwen did not seem to understand the response. Gary said,
"Yes, he's hungry. We're all hungry."
In unison, the Gwens removed the lids from their platters to reveal grapes, cherries, bite-sized chunks of melon and pineapple, small cubes of cheese, and what appeared to be wood and brass medieval analogs of cans of aerosol whipped cream. Philip squeezed the bridge of his nose and said,
"Oh, Lord."
I know, right?
Gary said, almost giggling. The blonde, brunette, and redheaded Gwens each delicately picked up a morsel of food from their platters and slowly pushed them toward the men's mouths. Jimmy, Tyler, and Gary dutifully opened their mouths to receive their first bite. Philip gently grasped the black-haired Gwen's wrist with one hand and took the piece of fruit with the other, popping it into his mouth. The black-haired Gwen withdrew her hand and sucked the juice from her fingertips while looking deeply into Philip's eyes. Philip looked away while he chewed his pineapple chunk. Without looking back, he asked her,
"What's your name?"
The black-haired Gwen purred,
"I'm the one with black hair."
"He didn't even bother to give them names,"
Philip said, straining the words through gritted teeth. Philip sat down on the bearskin rug, sighing heavily. The one with black hair put down the platter and lowered herself to the floor as well, though she didn't sit on the rug so much as she stretched her legs out to one side, keeping them together but bent to accentuate the flare of her hips and the narrowness of her waist. Her torso remained upright, her weight supported by one hand, while the other explored the surface of the rug. She slowly ran her fingers through the long fur, humming with pleasure. She said.
"It feels so soft and warm on my skin."
"The skin of your hand?"
Philip asked. She gave him a heavy-lidded look in the eyes and said,
"Yes."
She held her hand out to him. Philip shook his head, then picked up the platter of food from the floor and turned so he could eat it without looking at the black-haired Gwen. He said, to anyone who was listening,
"I notice these simulations adapt a little better to our responses."
"Yeah," Tyler agreed. "He probably put more time into writing this part of the program."
"Yeah," Philip said. "I bet he did. I'm sure this part of the quest has been rigorously tested."
Down in the seating area, the other men were thoroughly enjoying their meal. The blonde Gwen had just placed a grape in Gary's mouth and was reaching for a cherry when he shook his head no and nodded toward the can of whipped cream. Blonde Gwen smiled wickedly and picked up the can. The can was made out of very small barrel staves, held together with small riveted brass hoops. The domed brass top was tipped with a nozzle that looked like carved ivory. She lifted the can and dispensed some whipped cream onto her index finger, which she offered to Gary. He accepted the offer. She started to put more of the whipped cream on her finger, but he again shook his head no and opened his mouth wide. She aimed the nozzle at his mouth and fired. She was a tad overzealous, and whipped cream went all over Gary's face. Gary laughed.
"Oh, you poor dear," she said. "I guess we'll have to go get you cleaned up."
"Yes," Gary said. "That! We have to do that!"
The blonde stood up and offered Gary her hand. He leapt to his feet and took her hand. He beamed down at Tyler and Jimmy.
"I'm gonna go get cleaned," he said. So we heard, Jimmy said.
Yes,
Gary said.
You did hear it, right?
Yes, we did,
Tyler agreed. Gary said,
good,
as the blonde led him by the hand to the staircase. He glanced over and saw Philip sitting cross-legged on the bearskin rug, holding the platter of fruit chunks as if it were a paper plate at a summer barbecue, miserably eating while the black-haired Gwen watched his every move adoringly.
Don't worry, Philip,
Gary said as he and the blonde walked up the stairs.
I'll be vigilant. No detail will escape my notice.
Philip muttered,
he's gonna get himself killed.
Well, he's gonna get himself something, Tyler said, chewing a strawberry while the red-headed Gwen looked on adoringly. Lighten up, Philip. He's not a dummy.
Philip stared at Tyler.
Not as big a dummy as you think, Tyler said. Besides, it's easy for you to take the high road here. You're the only one of us with a steady girlfriend.
Philip said,
first of all, that shouldn't matter.
Tyler said,
but we all know it does.
Secondly,
Philip continued,
Gary hits on every woman he meets. Constantly.
Yeah,
Tyler said.
Do you think that means he has a lot of success?
That's a good point,
Jimmy said, peeking around the side of the brunette Gwen's head to make eye contact with Philip.
Do you really keep looking for something after you found it?
Philip lapsed into a sullen silence, quietly munching his mixed fruit and cheese platter and trying not to listen to Jimmy and Tyler slurp and giggle their way through theirs. After a few more chunks of fruit, Jimmy said,
hey, Tyler, you want to take your bath next?
Of course Tyler did, but he was deeply suspicious of anything Jimmy did, especially if it seemed like an act of kindness. Tyler glared at Jimmy, then said,
why? Why do you want me to? You trying to get me out of the room for some reason?
Jimmy said,
no, I'm just trying to figure out the order. Honestly, Tyler, I know you don't trust me, but you're going to have to let me out of your sight, unless you want to watch me take my bath.
Tyler thought a moment, then said,
I've decided to trust you, for now.
Jimmy said, splendid, and went back to allowing himself to be fed. Philip spent a moment contemplating his view of the back half of the brunette Gwen until he snapped out of it and averted his eyes. His gaze resettled, quite naturally, on his side view of the red-headed Gwen. Philip physically turned his face away and found himself looking directly at the black-haired Gwen, staring at him, smiling. Philip looked at the floor.
How are any of us going to face Gwen after this?
Tyler said,
the same way we face every woman we fantasized about, but not had sex with.
Which is a lot of them,
Jimmy added. Philip looked up from the floor and watched Jimmy and Tyler enjoy their meal for a moment before saying,
this is a lot more than just a fantasy, Tyler.
Yes, Tyler allowed, but it's a lot less than sex.
Philip said,
yeah, for now.
He glanced at the staircase.
For us.
You worried about Gary? Tyler asked.
Yes,
Philip answered.
Well, don't be. He may act dumb sometimes, but I trust him.
I promise you, Philip, he's in complete control of the situation.
Upstairs, in the bathroom, Gary was in complete control of the situation. He had entered the room, seen the bathtub full of warm, soapy water, and had decided that the only prudent course of action was to immediately disrobe.
I'm supposed to be taking a bath, right? You don't do that in your clothes, he thought. That would be crazy.
He started removing his clothes, then turned to see if the blonde Gwen was watching him undress. She was. As he continued to undress, he watched her watching him undress. As always happens whenever someone watches you do something you usually do alone, Gary was gripped with the uneasy feeling that he was undressing wrong, and that the false Gwen was judging him.
Get a grip, he thought. You're taking off your pants. As long as you end up not wearing pants, you can't be doing it wrong.
Despite his internal pep talk, The surveillance had him so unnerved that he did end up tugging at his pants as they pooled flaccidly around his ankles, before realizing that in order to fully remove them, he would have to lift at least 1 foot off the ground. Gary got down to his underwear. They were the style commonly called tighty-whities. Though after having been worn for so long and while covering so much distance, they were no longer either white or tight. He knew they were not flattering, but he couldn't quite force himself to remove them. He turned to gauge the blonde Gwen's reaction to the sight of him mostly undressed. She did not scream and flee, which he took as a positive sign. She also did not disrobe herself, which he found less encouraging.
Okay, fun is fun, Gary thought, but I can't let this go any further.
Gary slowly approached her. She did not retreat or look away.
I mean it, he told himself. I can't let this go too much further.
Soon he was kissing her, and she was kissing him back. He carefully started untying the laces of her peasant blouse. She made no move to stop him. Gary thought,
seriously, I can never let anyone know how far I'm letting this go.
Gary stopped thinking. He felt her in his arms. He heard her breathing, heavy in his ear. He felt her fingernails digging into his back, her movements becoming jerky and uncoordinated. The sound of her breath took on a wet, panting quality. In a deep, husky growl, she said,
I'll gnaw the meat from your ribcage.
Gary said,
if that's what you're into, baby.
He continued kissing her, moving down to the base of her neck, when she started swinging her head a bit more violently than he would have liked. He was becoming dimly aware that she no longer seemed to be actively engaged in the project. He opened his eyes and looked at the shoulder he was kissing and thought,
I'm pretty sure that wasn't mint green before.
Gary drew back from the woman, holding her at arm's length to get a good look. Her flesh was green and wet. The centers of her eyes were white, and her teeth were black, the opposite of how Gary usually liked it. Her cloud of blonde hair had become slick, slimy, and matted.
I can make this work, he thought.
He tried kissing her again, but his heart wasn't really in it. It was over. She croaked,
You will suffer a thousand torments before this night is through.
Gary sighed.
Don't.
He let go of her and looked around the room. The walls were decrepit and covered with mold. The inviting tub full of hot, clear water was now filthy and full of green slime. Zombie Gwen stood where he left her, hissing and sputtering, but she made no move to attack. He turned and took 2 steps to get back to his clothes, which still sat in a heap where he'd left them on the floor. He became aware of Zombie Gwen closing in on him very rapidly. He stopped, whipping around to defend himself. She stopped just short of him, snarling threateningly, but not making any move to actually harm him.
You will beg me for mercy,
she said.
Mercy you will not get.
Gary mumbled,
Yeah, I wish.
Then, playing a hunch, he took 1 large step backward. She lurched forward exactly as far as he had, but no farther.
It's just like the bridge and the river rocks, he thought. Keep us moving, but don't actually kill us.
Zombie Gwen slathered and snapped crazily at Gary, but she did not move any closer to him. He glared back at her while he slowly pulled his clothes back on. When he was fully dressed, he walked back down the stairs with Zombie Gwen following right behind, closely enough that he could hear her wet breathing and feel the wind from her repeated attempts to grab him, but not close enough to actually make physical contact.
Hey, guys, he said. We were right. It's a trap.
As his head dipped below the ceiling of the first floor, he saw that the seductive decor of the room had been replaced with splintered rotten wood and moldering filth. Tyler and Jimmy were standing ankle deep in a pit of muck that had been the conversation pit. Standing next to them were two identical copies of the zombified Gwen that pursued Gary. The only difference was that instead of a matted slick of sickly blonde hair, they had wet mops of red and brown hair falling limply from their scalps. They hissed and cursed and slobbered, but they remained roughly arm's length from Tyler and Jimmy and seemed rooted in place.
Oh, Gary said. You know.
Yeah, Tyler said. We kind of figured it out for ourselves.
The first hint was when a piece of cantaloupe turned into maggots in my mouth, Jimmy said. A thing like that tends to get your attention.
Philip said,
At least you got some protein.
He was standing in front of the long dormant fireplace on a rotted, moldy rug next to a black-haired deadite who seemed to want to tear out his jugular with her teeth but could not quite bring herself to do it. Tyler said,
Man, you don't have to act so happy about this.
Philip said,
No, I don't have to, but I choose to. Really, guys, you didn't think this was going to have a happy ending, did you? With you settling down with your Gwen-shaped pleasure replicants and having kids?
Gary ambled down the stairs, followed by his evil Gwen.
No, he said. I didn't picture that. But I was hoping for a happy ending.
Tyler looked at the hellish effigy of Gwen nearest him.
You will beg me to let you die, she said.
You're all talk,
Tyler said. After a moment's thought, Tyler continued to the whole group.
Everything here is. I'm beginning to think that since Todd killed Jeff, the only real danger we've faced has been the danger we put ourselves in. Walking on narrow ledges and playing with pointy weapons. I don't think the wolves would even kill us if we let them. They'd probably just chew on us without breaking the skin.
Gary said,
That still sounds irritating.
Yeah,
Tyler said,
but not deadly. That's Todd's game. He wants to keep us moving, but he also wants to keep us alive. I bet we could still spend the night in this house, no problem. We just have to trap the Gwens here in another room. Hopefully one outside of hearing range.
Philip surveyed the room and said,
I don't know. I mean, I think you're right, but this doesn't seem like a very pleasant place to spend the night.
Yeah, Gary said. It would have been before. I think things went sour when I tried to get my freak on.
Not the first time that's happened, Philip said. Perhaps the fact that you call it getting your freak on is part of the problem.
Tyler considered the red-haired zombie Gwen.
They're not really people. They're artificial characters, just like the miners and the wolves. I wonder, if we killed them, would two more pop up in their place? And would they be like these, or would the new ones revert to the way they were before?
Jimmy said,
I have a better idea. They follow us, right? Why not hitch them up to the sledge? Then we could walk out in front, and they'd pull all the weight.
Without warning, a rectangle of light appeared on the wall and quickly resolved itself into a program window, showing the feed from Todd's webcam. The kitchen, visible over his left shoulder, was untidy. The living space to his right was no better. He looked tired, unshaven, and angry. Todd said,
I figured you'd be scared when the lady's all putrefied. I honestly thought you had higher standards than this.
Gary said,
Glad to disappoint you.
Todd took a long sip from the straw of a large carbonated beverage, then said,
I hate you. All of you. I go to all this trouble to create a quest, and you jerks just can't wait to screw it up.
Gary said,
Todd, we didn't screw it up. You did. You made a death trap. They won't actually kill us. Who does that?
It won't kill you yet, Gary,
Todd said.
It will kill you. Make no mistake. I killed Jeff, and I will kill you too. Just not yet. Right now, I'm just prolonging the suffering.
Well, that's more reason for us to not cooperate, Tyler said, folding his arms.
Todd looked down at the four of them and let out a long breath.
Look, he said, you're right. A lot of the stuff I've thrown at you so far has been designed to keep you moving without actually killing you. I saw that you were onto it on day one.
When I told you that I was onto you? Tyler suggested. Todd ignored him.
The wolves seemed to work okay, so I figured you'd forgotten. But the River Rock showed that you hadn't. I've been calibrating the later challenges to be more dangerous. I just hadn't gotten to the Temptresses yet. Don't worry. From here on out, the dangers you face will be real. Actually, I guess you should worry.
So you say, Jimmy said. But why shouldn't we just assume that you're just saying that to scare us, and that you'll go right back to prolonging our agony?
Todd leaned into the camera so that his face filled the entire window.
Because you idiots are getting on my nerves now, and I'm not really interested in prolonging my own agony. I plan to take a more active role in things from now on. I'm really looking forward to watching you die, one at a time, for my amusement. I'm getting impatient.
Well, fine, Jimmy said. We'll just get a good night's sleep in this house you've provided for us, then tomorrow we'll hitch your sisters here up to our sledge, and we can all get on with it.
Todd smiled.
You're welcome to spend the night. In fact, let me make it a little cozier for you.
At the bottom of the window, the tops of Todd's hands moved a bit. The familiar sound of a computer keyboard filtered up. Fire flared from the corners of the room and raced along the edge of the floor as if following a trail of gasoline. The flames consumed the corners of the floor, leaving an ever-decreasing area in which the wizards could stand. The walls of the building began to creak and groan. The ceiling bowed downward alarmingly. Philip joined Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy in the middle of the room. The Gwens receded into the inferno and were engulfed. Waves of unbearable heat lashed the wizards. Tyler pointed toward the door and shouted, "Typical!" The others saw that there was a narrow, flame-free path leading to the front door, which was open, offering a clear view of the cold night air outside.
"Gosh, Todd, I get the feeling you might want us to go outside!"
Tyler shouted at Todd, whose image was still leering at them from the wall. Todd said,
"You picked up on that, eh? Well, you'd better get to it. I can force you to move on with fire, or I could just fill the building with wolves. Ooh! Or how's this idea grab you? Fire wolves! I'll have to work on that. In the meantime..."
As Todd's voice trailed off, the heat intensified. The flames leapt higher into the air and started to work their way up the walls. The wizards could feel their skin crisping, and they instinctively ran for the door. Because of where he'd been standing when the flames appeared, Philip was the last one in line as they dashed for the exit. Even as his feet were fleeing the heat, some part of Philip's brain realized that he was also fleeing into the cold, and that he didn't have his fur cloak, or even his three robes, to protect him from the chill. He noticed again that there were coat hooks on the wall next to the door. There were still garments hanging from the hooks. Since the cabin had transformed, they were now dusty and covered with cobwebs and mildew. A few of them were on fire, but the others seemed serviceable. He didn't have time to make a careful selection, so he snatched the two largest and least flaming objects as he fled through the door and out into the chill night air. They stood a safe distance from the blazing cabin, panting and feeling grateful to be safe, until Gary pointed toward the inferno and yelled, "The rock!" The heavy lump of dull gray diluine ore was where they had left it, less than 5 feet from the porch, which meant that now it and the very flammable wooden sledge that made it easier to transport were less than 5 feet from the fire. As they watched, they could see smoke rising from the raw timbers of the sledge. They ran back toward the fire. They pushed and heaved and attempted to smother the fire with curse words. Finally, they got the sledge back to where they'd been, a safe distance from the fire, and panted from their exertion, grateful to be alive.
Well,
Jimmy heaved between breaths.
At least we won't have trouble keeping warm tonight.
The flaming cabin extinguished as suddenly as if someone had flipped a switch, because that's essentially what had happened. Jimmy glanced at the sky and said,
good one.
Philip stumbled over to the two garments he'd rescued from the fire. He'd thrown them on the ground when they dashed back to save the sledge. Now he had time to shake the dirt out of them and see exactly what he had. The larger and warmer looking of the two items turned out to be a fur coat, a slinky, full-length, silver and gray striped lady's fur that instantly tore at the shoulder seams when he put it on and would not close around his middle. On the plus side, the fur was thick, warm, and soft, with a high collar that would help keep his neck and ears from getting cold, and large cuffs that would help protect his hands. The others watched him test his range of motion, each gyration of his torso accompanied by a small tearing sound from the shoulder seams. Tyler looked at the second item lying on the ground and asked,
what else did you get?
Philip lifted the garment and held it up in the moonlight. It was a tank top, made of shiny black plastic. It had surprising cutouts in obvious places. Philip said,
I don't believe it would fit.
Tyler said,
thanks for not trying.